Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
Blue Wire.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast, brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast and presented by BetOnline.ag and Deal Dash. Head over to Deal Dash and use code Big Screen for 100 free bids. More on that in the ad reads. And if you're gambling on baseball, which you should be while we still got a season, head over to BetOnline.ag, use promo code Blue Wire to claim your welcome bonus, and then bet that entire welcome bonus on the Twins money line. Series wins over the White Sox, Cardinals, and Indians to start the season. You love to see it, folks. Speaking of baseball, today's episode is one I'm excited about as a baseball fan. Ryan Spader is one of the best personalities on Twitter. He's a baseball analyst, baseball author, and host of the Blue Wire podcast, The Walk-Off. When I reached out to him about coming on the pod, though, he hit me with his take on baseball movies, which is that most of them suck. Naturally, had to have him on to defend the take, which I really enjoyed. It was a fun episode. It was great to just talk baseball in general, but kind of See a perspective on baseball movies that you don't often get on this podcast. We did, we talked some of the characters in Major League, and then I just rapid-fired a bunch of the notable baseball movies, and he gave me the A or Nay. And we kind of discussed, we went in deep on a couple of them. Your favorite or least favorite movie is probably in this episode, so stay tuned for if Ryan thinks it sucks. We also talked some real baseball, which was pretty much just the Hall of Fame travesties of Fred McGriff and Johan Santana. It was just a very well-rounded baseball episode. Make sure you catch Ryan's pod, The Walk-Off, where he talks baseball with Holden Kushner. Their most recent episode covered MLB's new playoff format, which is the exact same format that Ryan proposed on his site almost a year ago. So MLB, just off stealing shit. Real quick shout-out to JT84, who left the most recent 5-star review on Apple Podcast. He titled it Awesome Podcast, Awesome Host, then went on to say a bunch of very nice things that soothes my fragile ego. You guys have been absolutely killing it with the 5-star reviews lately and the ratings. I think we just got over 200 ratings, which is just awesome. Like, I am honored about those 5-star ratings. Thank you to everyone who's done that. I think for that reason, I'm going to do another listener questions episode. You can get a question in over in the Big Screen Sports Facebook group. I think I've talked enough for this intro. Just make sure you subscribe, all that stuff. You guys know the drill. Check out the Blue Wire Network and Greg Olson's new pod, which you heard the drop for when the start of this podcast. It's something I'm really interested in, hearing about tight end play. But for now, let's talk some baseball movies with Ryan Spader. All right, my guest on today's episode of Big Screen Sports, he is a baseball analyst, author, and co-host of the Walk-Off Fellow podcast on the Blue Wire Sports Podcast Network, Ryan Spader. Ryan, thanks so much for taking the time to come on Big Screen Sports.
I really appreciate you having me on. Excited to talk some baseball movies with you.
Of course, I could talk baseball movies and just baseball in general all day. Good to have another fellow baseball guy on the pod. Before we get into today's kind of unique format episode, tell the folks where they can find The Walk-Off, what you guys have coming up.
Yeah, I think the best way to find it is just we post every episode on Twitter. We created our own Twitter for The Walk-Off, and that's just The Walk-Off Pod. And then Holden and I, both of us, pretty active on Twitter, so we're always sharing the content on there. I think most of our downloads come from the iTunes version.
And on that podcast, you guys just talking baseball, current news, current events, that kind of the gist of it for the listeners?
So I think Holden and I have a sort of unique show in that we kind of approach it from two different dynamics. I forced myself into baseball because I was a baseball fan, could no longer play, wanted to keep baseball a part of my life, and it wasn't by way of playing anymore. So I found a way in through the numbers, and then that kind of evolved from there. Holden is a true radio professional. He's been in radio for 23 years. He used to do local terrestrial shows And so it's a unique dynamic that the two of us have together. And we talk everything from baseball to secondhand stories we got. I've told stories about going out to get beers with some guys and some of the nonsense that ensues from there. And Holden, of course, has many of his own stories, having been in the business for over 20 years.
And plug your book for any baseball fans who might be interested in that as well. I'm just like, let's just go ahead and plug everything.
So Incredible Baseball Stats is a book of stats that you're not going to find on the back of a baseball card. I wrote it with my good friend Kevin Reavy. We have two volumes of it out, and it's probably something we're going to recreate every couple of years. It seems to do pretty well. People seem to enjoy it, and I just really like putting out content for people to enjoy, stuff that I myself would enjoy, and it's fun to be in a position where I'm able to share that and share my joy of the game with other people.
And that's kind of an expansion on your Twitter feed, because you're always tweeting out just the most random baseball facts. It's a really, really interesting feed. But Ryan, for this episode, where it's not going to be a typical one on this podcast, I usually cover a single baseball movie. But you know, when I reached out to you about coming on the pod, maybe talking a baseball movie, you dropped something of a hot take. You think most baseball movies suck, which is which is pretty unique. It's a pretty loaded genre. There are definitely some clunkers. So in a bit, we're gonna kind of rapid fire through a list. I'll name the movie. You're gonna give me a kind of a gladiator, yay or nay. You know, why it sucks, why it doesn't suck, and I'm gonna try to play devil's advocate one way or another. There are some movies I just cannot defend. There are some movies that I just cannot say are bad. So, you know, I want to open with a few questions, though. First and foremost, you know, for you, especially as a guy who does not like baseball movies, what makes a good sports movie?
I think they generally have to be true stories. Like, Rudy is a great sports movie. Remember the Titans. I think I tend to prefer football movies, which is odd because I don't really watch much football. I don't know what necessarily makes a sports movie a good movie, but I know what doesn't make it a good movie. And in the case of baseball, I just think when you have on-field play, it's usually pretty bad. It's pretty obvious. It's just not like being at a baseball game. And then there always just seems to be a story that really is the main theme of the movie that I'm just not particularly interested in. So often it is, I think Fever Pitch is one of the ones that you mentioned, and that was just about, you know, it was like a love story with a little baseball tie-in, and I just wasn't interested in it. Didn't really care for that movie at all.
Yeah, Fever Pitch is something I actually talked about on the latest episode of this pod I've released at recording time with Brandon Kelly, another fellow Blue Wire host. He brought up Fever Pitch, and I said that Fever Pitch is not a good movie, but it's weirdly like rewatchable. Like, it's bad but rewatchable, and I mean, it's on MLB Network all the time. You mentioned Rudy and Remember the Titans. Do you have two others that kind of make up your Mount Rushmore of sports movies?
Oh, man. I don't know. I just really don't care for sports movies in general. I think I liked The Invincible when it came out, the movie about Vince Papale, but I've really grown out of that. It's an older movie. I think sometimes you get pretty good boxing movies, and I default to the Rocky movies, which I always enjoyed as a kid, being a Philly guy. And then there's another one that's pretty good that's about the guy who was actually inspired Rocky, and it was called The Bleeder, or it may have had a second name, Chuck. And that was about the dude who actually was from North Jersey. Sylvester Stallone had seen him fight before, and he really went on to inspire what became of the Rocky movies. Didn't see a dime from it either.
I think they did a 30 for 30 on that guy as well. I think it was called The Real Rocky, if I remember correctly. But something you touched on a few minutes ago, kind of like being almost taken out of it if the action isn't good, that's basically like the genesis of this podcast. In a normal episode, we talk about what was authentic, what wasn't authentic, who looked like a good athlete, who didn't, and if you know, especially baseball for me, that also matters a lot. You know, when a guy looks like Freddie Prinze Jr. can't throw a baseball. You know, I'm a big sports fan in general, but baseball, I pick that out the most. I value guys who look like athletes, plot points that make sense. It's something we have fun with on this pod. But before we get into our kind of movie rapid fire, getting your opinion on the movies, you had an interesting baseball movie related tweet the other day. Lay out what was the exact wording of your tweet about Pedro Serrano from Major League?
So Pedro Serrano is a character that I actually did appreciate, and I kind of enjoy the Major League movies. It's one of the few that I'll watch maybe once every 2 or 3 years or something. But Super 70 Sports had a tweet on Pedro Serrano, and it said, "Pedro Serrano, the greatest slugger of the 80s, do not try to debate me on this." And I commented on that saying, "Imagine being Pedro Serrano, the president of the United States and the spokesperson for Allstate." It's very versatile actor that Dennis Haysbert, I believe I'm saying is Haysbert or Haysbert, is, and he's really made a nice career for himself as an actor.
He has. He's definitely kind of a, he's more than a that guy. He's not, because you know him from a few characters. He's also in, he also plays another baseball player in Mr. Baseball, but that tweet kind of, there's always been this fun exercise I've wanted to do and kind of talk out on this podcast and haven't gotten to do it yet, but thinking about taking a sports movie or taking any movie in general, it is fun to think about taking another character that actor has played and plugging them into that movie, like just basically dropping fish out of water and doing that. I think Major League is kind of a good one to do just like a test run on this with, because there's, for me, there's four main people who you could plug in a good character. Like, I'll fully admit I did not, 24 was a little before the heyday of 24 was a little before when I was watching like good TV. But Haysbert as President Palmer is not as much on my register. Were you a 24 fan?
I did. And I got into it long after they were, I don't know that I maybe watched one season week to week. I think I watched them all on box sets. And I recall one time I actually watched an entire season of 24 in a 24-hour period. I did really enjoy that series.
That's quite the endurance.
Yeah, it was a feat. But I didn't have to deal with commercials, of course. So I was knocking out 40. I think they were roughly 45 minutes long and managed to do an entire season in one day.
So what kind of baseball player, if you plugged President Palmer into left field of the Major League era Indians, what kind of change in the clubhouse is that?
Well, if you're taking out Pedro Serrano, it's an entirely different dynamic. I mean, you're losing the whole Jobu and the sacrificing of the chicken and everything that they had to do to make sure that Serrano could hit, and I'm sure he could probably hit a baseball a little bit, and it appeared that way anyway. He had a decent swing. I know he was an athlete in high school, and as a 6'5" guy, I think he'd probably be a little bit more of a leader in the clubhouse, you'd think, if he was leading the country in a show. But I don't know if you could take Pedro Serrano from those Indians teams.
There would be a lot less voodoo in the Indians clubhouse. There would be, you'd lose Harris getting drilled by that bat, which is really right. Unfortunate because that's a great, great bit of karma. The next guy who's an interesting one to think about, if you can plug in another character for, is Wesley Snipes, who is playing, he's Willie Mays Hayes. He's the center fielder, but he is also, Willie Mays Hayes is very, he's got a little bit of confidence and bravado that you see later in Wesley Snipes' career, but he's also very like timid, skinny, and skittish. And there's a lot of fun Wesley Snipes options to plug in. Do you have a favorite Wesley Snipes role that is not Willie Mays Hayes? Because right after this, he pretty much bulks up. He does New Jack City. He does White Man Can't Jump. He does U.S. Marshals.
That's a good sports movie, actually.
U.S. Marshals, which is a cable favorite of mine. And then, of course, there's Blade. Do you have a favorite? Would you want to plug in Sidney Dean from White Man Can't Jump into Major League?
Again, I think it's kind of interesting because you had that character of his. Major League came out in 89, I believe, right?
Yeah, 89.
So he was sort of almost like foreshadowing for Kenny Lofton. It was the same type of ball player, you know, your stereotypical leadoff guy who's going to steal bags for you, and then he eventually evolves into this dude who's going to get on base and sort of foreshadowed for Kenny Lofton. But I think you plug in Sidney Dean, which is a movie another one I really didn't consider, but that's definitely a sports movie. You're probably going to have a little bit of hustling going on in the clubhouses.
Sidney Dean is definitely more willing to clown on his teammates or whoever he's playing with. Willie Mays Hayes would have taken a little more charge in the clubhouse, without a doubt, as Sidney Dean. He would have been the shit talker, without a doubt.
And I agree with you that he did play sort of that timid character, but I could see, you know, Sidney Dean mixing it up with Wild Thing Rick Vaughn in that movie.
Absolutely. Okay, well, speaking of Wild Thing Rick Vaughn, there is a fun combo of characters that I think you can insert for both Charlie Sheen, who plays Wild Thing Rick Vaughn, and Tom Berenger, who plays Jake Taylor. 4 years before, or 3 years before Major League came out, they both starred in Platoon, with Berenger as the sadistic Sergeant Barnes, and Sheen as Chris Taylor, who is at first a very timid private in the U.S. Army. The Vietnam movie, very tough watch Vietnam movie. That would be an interesting dynamic because Jake Taylor is the unquestioned good guy leader of this team, and Sergeant Barnes is guilty of war crimes, especially against Sheen's character, especially against Taylor. So that would be a very interesting combo. Sergeant Barnes is the only wild card character I could pull from Berenger that would be, you know, that would be worth talking about. He kind of plays the same guy in his entire career, except for Jake Taylor, because he's always like a sniper. He's in Sniper. He's playing a cop, or he's playing like a stiff senator or something like that. He's just really always the same guy.
Yeah. I'm not too familiar with his all of the movies that he's in, and to be honest with you, if I went through and picked through, it'd probably be like, yeah, I've seen a ton, because I do enjoy war movies. I like war history. I don't particularly like war, but as somebody who I was in the Marine Corps myself for 5 years, and I definitely like those types of movies. I think if you put his character from Platoon in that, you're just completely shaking up the clubhouse, especially with losing a guy like Jake Harris that was that leader on the team.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at Berenger's IMDb, like there, like all these characters, there's like Lieutenant General James Longstreet in Gettysburg. He's an attorney. He's a doctor. He's a special forces sniper. It's just a senator, a sergeant, a detective. It's just, he's just rolling the all American roles. With Sheen, if you get away from Chris Taylor in Platoon, he's really, Rick Vaughn is kind of just an extension of his character from Ferris Bueller. That cameo, the guy who is
right,
on drugs,
yes.
That Ferris's sister, that Jeannie meets in the police station. It's basically kind of like that. If that guy then left the police station, stole a car, went and pitched in the California Penal League, and found out he threw 100.
Right. That's definitely the same character. And if you replace it, I actually never considered that. And that's really funny that there possibly could be sort of a tie there. I don't know. I guess you'd have to look into the writers and who was involved in everything. But I think if you're replacing Sheen with the same character there, you're getting the same thing. But the thing I think that's most interesting about Charlie Sheen is he's actually a decent ball player. I'm not sure he is playing much anymore because I think he's pushing like 60 years old. but and he, you know, he's of course always having the drug problems and everything. But I remember reading in Lenny Dykstra's book, he was hanging out with Charlie Sheen, and Sheen had batting cages in his house, and he said, "Hey Lenny, I was wondering if you mind come checking out my swing." And Dykstra kind of approached it with this whole thing like, "Oh yeah, sure, man." And his thought was like, "Oh, here's another loser who wants me to see and make him into a major league ball player or something." But Dykstra was surprised, and he was like, "Charlie Sheen could absolutely rake." And I know for Major League, I believe he was on steroids beforehand, and he got his fastball up to, I think, 84, 85 miles per
86.
Hour.
86. And 86. He indeed was on steroids, and he looked good. He has a legitimate good delivery, especially when you consider 89. Like what deliveries look like in 89 versus what they look like now.
And consider the fact that 86 is what some of those guys were throwing at that point.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I actually hadn't even pondered that. Like he was throwing 86 in an era like. We as fans watched Jared Weaver get by with 86 recently.
Yeah, I don't think he would be doing much pitching today. And had you took in 1989 Charlie Sheen and put him into the big leagues, maybe he could have got some guys out, but he would have had to shed the Wild Thing Rick Vaughn reputation that he had, because 86 was not that, I don't know, 100-mile-per-hour fastball that they had him throwing. He would have to kind of fine-tune his approach and become one of those corner painters, maybe get a Greg Maddux like strike zone or something.
Yeah, if you had thrown Wild Thing Rick Vaughn into present day baseball, he'd be wondering where the coffee pot with Greenies was. let's take a quick ad break, and then I think it is time to get into our Ryan Spader Hates Baseball Movies rapid fire.
Let's do it.
Big Screen Sports is brought to you by Deal Dash. Have you ever heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you never expect at a price you never believe. You need this in 2020. You need a win, honestly. We all need a win. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0, only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is that auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone has 10 seconds to answer, the item is yours. This is a chance to get something, scoop something at a massive discount. If you go ahead and sign up now, DealDash is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon sign up on top of their other discounts. Go to DealDash.com and use the offer code BIGSCREEN or DealDash.fm/BIGSCREEN. That's DealDash.fm/BIGSCREEN. Big Screen Sports is also brought to you by our old friends at BetOnline.ag. Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. For me, guys, that means the Minnesota Twins, who, on the day of recording this, kicked absolute ass against the White Sox today. It was great. I wish I had bet on it with BetOnline.ag, but I did not get my play in time. But no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partner, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and prop bets to bet on available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry, famous for playing for those Spurs. See what they had to say on what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they are calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. And remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. All right, we're back. Ryan, original premise of this episode was that you think baseball movies suck. We're going to rapid fire through a list. See what you like, see what you don't. I'm going to try to play devil's advocate. You know, or at least support a conclusion if I agree with it. Let's start with a movie we were just discussing in length, Major League. What is your opinion of Major League? And if it's fresh enough in your memory, Major League 2.
I did like the Major League movies. However, there were parts in the movies that were just completely unnecessary. I could have done without the whole background story of Jake Taylor and Corbin Benson. What was his name he was playing in that?
Oh, Roger Dorn.
Roger Dorn. And I don't know. I think some of those background stories and Wild Thing Rick Vaughn sleeping with Dorn's wife and all that stuff. It was just not... I would say this is good in terms of a baseball movie, but in terms of a movie overall, I'd probably give it like a 4 or 5.
See, with Major League, one of the things I really like about it is the action looks good. The player, like, Haysbert can swing, Sheen can throw. They do a lot of good extra work with Jake Taylor, with Behringer's character. Snipes is the one, they had to slow-mo it down to make him look fast, but he looks terrible swinging a bat. Wesley Snipes is notoriously not a very good athlete. That was kind of the story out of White Man Can't Jump. My biggest problem with Major League 2, and I won't dive into it too much here because there's an episode on this, I think 3 months ago, two, 3 months ago, I don't know, the time has kind of stood still lately, where I talked to my buddy Darren Vaught about Major League 2 and Wesley Snipes and versus Omar Epps and kind of the faults with that one. But the fault was that with that was that they tried to just run the same playbook and run it a year later, even though they made the movie 5 or 6 years later. That's a big fault there. The next one I want to talk about is an all-time classic. I want you to tread lightly when you talk about this one. Let's talk about Bull Durham.
I did like Bull Durham.
Okay, good.
That's very good for a baseball movie. I would say even good for a movie in general. I think it's kind of done the right way, especially, I think one of the things that adds to this Bull Durham is the fact that when you're looking at a minor league team, like, this is so much more believable than having ball players play in what's supposed to be a major league ballpark, and you don't have that real atmosphere, whereas you can pull that off with a double A team.
Yeah, it's, to me, Bull Durham is perfect, and it's aged so perfectly too. It basically jump started the next wave of minor league baseball. Bull Durham did a ton for the actual business of minor league baseball, which, like, regardless of what you think of the movie, that's great. I love minor league baseball. But Kevin Costner is pretty much like the Jesus of this podcast. Bull Durham, I feel like, is going to be just my last episode ever. I'm just so afraid to touch it. It's absolutely my favorite, just my favorite baseball movie. One of my favorite movies in general. The next one that I want to talk about is a controversial one when you think of the historical accuracy of it. What is your take on Moneyball?
So I was kind of excited for Moneyball going into it, and it let me down. Exactly what you're saying in terms of the accuracies, what was going on in the field, what they were evaluating, it just didn't really land with me. And because I went into it with some sort of expectation, I didn't really think it was a very good movie. I do, however, think it's pretty funny that I can't remember what his name with the Oakland Athletics organization was, but he didn't want himself portrayed by Jonah Hill.
I think it was J.P. Riccardi, was it?
I think that's right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty funny. And then from that, I guess the idea is that Jonah Hill character was a conglomeration of several different people, which is just stupid.
Yeah, they also just left out a ton about the Oakland A's, that 2002 team. There's no mention of Miguel Tejada, Jermaine Dye. There's only a fleeting mention of Tim Hudson. Nothing about Barry Zito or Mark Mulder. I could have absolutely done without the Billy Beans family storyline, like his daughter and his ex-wife, like the random, you know, you're using some of your random casting power to get Robin Wright in on this movie is kind of a weird move. Next movie up, a childhood classic, The Sandlot.
So The Sandlot's good for nostalgia. I liked it as a kid, but... And even if you would have asked me this probably a couple of years ago, I would still have said that I really like that movie. But somebody, because there's so little sports to talk about, you get a lot of sports talk radio, which I listen to quite a bit of, and doing different bits. And one of their bits was on movies. And they had talked about movies that you enjoyed as a child, you may still enjoy now, but when you look at it objectively, was it actually a good movie? And I did that with The Sandlot, and I was like, you know, I don't think it actually is that good of a movie. I mean, it's fun for kids. It's good for what it was and what it is. And I think young kids enjoy it. But as an adult looking at it objectively, all it gives for me is nostalgia.
Yeah, it is definitely, it's got a lot of nostalgia in its favor. I think most, you know, a lot of people who treasure The Sandlot did experience it as kids. I think there's a movie that's later on the list that benefits from that more. Some, a movie that I think is just objectively awful, but people, like especially people in their late 20s and 30s, hold it in such high regard because it came out when they were a kid. But the Sandlot, I did an episode on it about a year ago now, and for me, it still holds up. I think it is. I think the nostalgia is why it holds up. It hits all those notes of being a kid. It's not as much like the baseball movie aspect of it, although the July 4th scene is great, but it's the nostalgia of being a kid and bonding with your friends. I think that's why it's a very good bonding with your friends movie. I think that like the neighborhood, you know, and it kind of like a Lost Time movie too.
I definitely agree that the 4th of July scene is fantastic when they all pack lips, right? for me, it's, I don't know. I think it's kind of just been ruined for me because I realize that all it really brings to me is nostalgia. Maybe that'll change if I have some kids one day and I watch it with them. Maybe that'll change my opinion on it again. But I would say it's probably not a very good movie.
See, I've watched it with my six-year-old and he didn't really get a whole lot of what was going on. The whole, you know, throwing up at the carnival because of using chewing tobacco definitely flew right over his head, thankfully. But you know, it's something that, yeah, when you experience it with your kids, it'll be something that I think hits home. The next one I have up is also a movie about kids or father and son. It is Field of Dreams.
So I don't think I've seen Field of Dreams in 10 years, and it's, I would say it's okay for a baseball movie, I suppose. Again, not a very good movie as it is for itself.
That's a very hot take. Although I will say there are two camps with Field of Dreams. I think it is either it's not a very good movie or it is fantastic. There's not a lot of in the middle with Field of Dreams.
So the idea is, and this is Costner again, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. The whole idea of him chasing a ghost around and it tying into real life somehow, it just kind of weirds me out a little bit. It's just unrealistic to me as it seems. And I just don't really like the movie that much.
That's fair. The reason that Field of Dreams gets me is because, and it's heavy-handed with this, you have to kind of accept that they're going to beat you over the head with the baseball is pure in its own way, and baseball is beautiful, and our national pastime, and what baseball can mean to people. And that really resonates with me. It can definitely come off as cheesy, but if you can get past it, I'm a big fan. I'm in the Field of Dream. I love Field of Dreams camp. Another Costner movie next up, and it's unfortunately timely. We're recording this a couple weeks before it actually drops. It's For Love of the Game. We're actually recording this today that Kelly Preston, who is the love interest of Kevin Costner, passed away. But what is your For Love of the Game take?
I actually thought that movie was pretty good, and not just for a baseball movie, but overall. I mean, you said Kevin Costner is like the god of this podcast. I think he's a pretty good actor overall, and then I know he's
great really, athlete too.
Yeah, really, yes, really in with baseball. I think something else that really helped this movie out was having Vin Scully in it.
Absolutely.
One thing about this movie, though, that if I go back and watch it now, it just, like, seeing John C. Reilly as a semi-serious character, there's another, I think, Perfect Storm he's in. It just is, it's really difficult for me to see that face and think of Dale from the Step Brothers and take it seriously.
Well, it's so funny, because he was, like, he's in Days of Thunder. I think Days of Thunder is the earliest movie I've seen him in. It was the first time I saw him, but, because I didn't see Days of Thunder until I was an adult, but, in the 90s, yeah, he's got Days of Thunder, and he's got this and Perfect Storm, like you said, and Gangs of New York and Boogie Nights. And he is a valuable character actor. He's in, like, recently he was in The Sisters Brothers opposite Joaquin Phoenix and completely holds his own. Like he's legitimately fan, like a very good actor. But then he's also like the guy who got mad because Will Ferrell was putting his nuts on his drum set. It's just a completely, and like he's also Cal Naughton Jr. I mean, right. He's just very versatile. But like after undertaking those insane comedic roles, it is like when you go back and see him in For Love of the Game, it's like, oh, holy shit, that's Cal Naughton Jr.
Yeah, I'm with you, and maybe that's my inability to separate the characters that he's played in the. I guess the future of his career versus the past. But for me, I think it's like, I don't know, you have all those shows or movies where somebody's in it. Like for me, an actor who, Kiefer Sutherland, I see him in anything and I'm just like, it's Jack Bauer. I can't see him as anything else.
Yeah, he is definitely, John C. Reilly has definitely kind of reached that point just because of the heights of those comedic movies. Part of that Ferrell run was so strong. The next movie is one that I have to ask you also. It's Little Big League. And have you seen it since adulthood?
Not in a long time. And that's one of them that it's just, to me, it's so unrealistic and ridiculous. I can't get with it.
So that's one that I would bet like my pinky finger that it's coming on MLB Network in the next 2 weeks because they have been showing the shit out of it. And that is one that I would encourage you to take the time, watch it as an adult and say, okay, there's going to be a 12-year-old manager. He and his mom are not going to live in a house that is becoming of a young billionaire. And other than that, you just like accept that and say, okay, this is unrealistic. This would never happen. That is strange. And then you kind of take the rest of the movie in stride and it holds up really well. They got a ton of athletes. They have actual current big leaguers playing for the Twins. And then they get big name guys, like obviously Griffey and Carlos Baerga. They get ex big leaguers, like first round picks, AAA guys who are on the team. They have the runaround Sue montage, which makes its way on baseball Twitter every now and then. It's just the best baseball montage ever. I think Little Big League has held up far better than another movie that is coming down on this list that listeners of this podcast will know that I absolutely hate. But I am a Little Big League stan. It is also because I am a massive Minnesota Twins fan and I wanted to be Billy Haywood when I grew up. The next movie, A League of Their Own. America's Dad, Tom Hanks. What's your take?
Oh, I love Tom Hanks. Didn't really care for A League of Their Own. And
ooh, that's a hot one.
Yeah, it's another one that I probably haven't seen in a long time. I understand the concept of it and the fact that, you know, this is something that did happen. There are some good characters. It kind of weirds me out that Rosie O'Donnell played a baseball player.
That's back when she was like at her peak like that. And I think like shortly after that, there's the Rosie O'Donnell show comes around and then.
Right.
And then things kind of go a little more south for her as far as public perception.
But it's not a movie that I would have any interest in ever seeing again. I would say probably falls into the category of good for a baseball movie, not good for a movie overall.
That's one I would encourage you to give another shot, especially Tom Hanks. It is.
You're asking a lot of me here.
I'm telling you, that's one I would put on your list. I would give it another shot. I would really sit down, give it your full attention. Want to shout out Anika Orok, who did the incredible the illustrated book. I think it's the Incredible Women of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League or some name similar. She is in, she was on a past episode of this. Her book is fantastic. The history of that league is really interesting. I am a big League of Their Own fan. Next up, The Natural. Robert Redford, Handsome Rob. What's your natural take?
So I kind of like The Natural as, again, another one where I like it as a baseball movie, but then I separate it from baseball. I like the character I really like the story of his career. I think I might even have one of those Roy Hobbs cards. But I kind of get lost with, like, I get that the whammer is supposed to be Babe Ruth, and it's just so, that person just seemed so unathletic to me. And I know that Babe Ruth had almost a 50-inch waist and everything, and he was a great pitcher and a hell of a hitter. It just, I don't know, this, the concept of this woman wanting to shoot the best baseball player, it's, she's some sort of weird serial killer or something. It just, I don't know. It's just not really, I think they could have done a little bit better than that.
So The Natural has been doing the MLB Network No More Baseball run as well. Kind of like, it's been that, it's been The Natural, Little Big League, Major League, Major League 2, another movie that we're going to discuss in a bit. And The Natural is a lot slower than I remembered. I haven't covered it on the pod yet. I haven't given it the full start to finish rewatch in years, honestly. It gets, I do mention it a lot. When Roy Hobbs knocks out the lights at the end, that is always my example for the big chill moment, which is, you know, a category in a normal episode of the pod, the moment that gives you the chills. And that does. It's still, you know, if I turn it on TV and it's like 15 minutes from that scene, I'm probably going to park my ass on the couch and watch it. But it definitely lags. I'll try to save most of my takes for when I finally give it the full rewatch again, but I feel like there's a lot of fat to be trimmed off that one.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah. Okay, the next movie up, and this is the one that I didn't want to mention yet that has been doing the MLB Network run. It is my arch enemy. It doesn't know it, but I know it. It's Trouble with the Curve.
I don't know how you can possibly have Clint Eastwood in a movie, and I believe he produced it, maybe even paid for it, and have a bad movie. Because I'm with you. Not a good movie overall. Justin Timberlake is I think he was a baseball player, right? I don't even remember.
He's an ex-baseball player, current scout, trying to be a broadcaster. And like,
yeah,
I thought Justin Timberlake was really entertaining in The Social Network. And then he goes and does this.
He was also really good, I think, in Alpha Dog, but that was more of a
role. Oh, yeah, I love him. Alpha Dog. That was like teenage me was all about Alpha Dog.
Yeah, but no, I'm with you. We agree, both a bad baseball movie and a bad movie overall.
I mean, by the end of everyone in this movie's career, it will feature, I am assuming, two Oscar winners, because Clint Eastwood has won an Oscar. I assume Amy Adams will get her due at some point. Timberlake is one of the biggest stars of all time. John Goodman, who's fantastic. And this movie, I mean, longtime listener to this pod, don't want to hear me rail on this anymore, but it sucks. It's one of the worst baseball movies ever. Didn't have a baseball consultant. The action looks terrible. The plot points make no sense. It really tries to insult the new wave front office guys, like stats guys, and it's so bad at it. It's just like a baby boomer baseball wet dream that is just terrible, and we're not going to talk about it anymore. We're going to move on to Mr. Baseball, Tom Selleck, Mr. Mustache. Ryan, what's your take?
I think that was pretty good. I liked Mr. Baseball. The concept of it is pretty fresh in terms of a, you know, an American ball player going over to Japan to play baseball, which happens more than people realize. I think there's a lot of former big leaguers or guys who were, you know, never made it out of the minors going into the Japanese Pro League. And when you look throughout history, there's a lot of players who went there with the same goal, to get back and play with a big league organization, and did so successfully. So I would say that's a pretty good movie.
I also really buy Tom Selleck as an aging first baseman. I think he's very good in that role. Japanese baseball culture is very interesting. I don't know if you caught the documentary that aired on ESPN recently, Koshien, about the tournament there. I'm going to try to have an episode on it at some point. But Japanese baseball culture is very interesting. It was a very fresh movie. I mean, for the, you know, time. It was made before I was born. But just when you think about it in the genre of baseball movies, you look at baseball movies of the past 40 years, it's still very unique. to most everything else that's out there. All right, next up is a personal favorite of mine. It is one that really only features one baseball scene. It is in some ways kind of a stretch to call it a baseball movie, but for me, it's such a good movie. I wanted to leave it on. I feel like everyone needs to watch it. Everybody Wants Some. Ryan, did you catch Everybody Wants Some?
So I looked at this list, and I don't know how I overlooked this or thought it was something else. I'm looking at the movie now, and I don't think it's one I've ever seen. However, looking at this soundtrack, it's a pretty damn good soundtrack, so I may have to give this a shot.
Good, so I get to pitch it to you. This is great. This is exactly what I needed. Okay, so Everybody Wants Some, and for Ryan or any listener who are unfamiliar, I've talked this one up quite a few times. It's the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused. It is a movie in the kind of the same vein. Set instead of Dazed and Confused is set over one day, this one is set over one weekend. It is a college baseball player, a freshman's first weekend at school, and like when he first gets to college. And while there's only one baseball scene, it in my mind inherently like it gets the best. It does the best job of examining the chemistry between a baseball team. It's a shame. There's really only two legitimate college baseball movies I can think of. One is this. One is Summer Catch. Summer Catch stinks. This one captures the essence of a college baseball team so well. It features really good performances. It also features a lot of really good athletes. They only did one baseball scene, but they got guys who look like players. They have one of Houston Street's younger brothers who played at Texas. They have Tyler Hoechlin, who started on for UC Irvine, is now a legitimate actor. He was actually just in Palm Springs, the new Andy Samberg movie on Hulu. They get Glenn Powell, who is just a fucking stud in every sense of the term. It is a fantastic movie, fantastic soundtrack, fantastic look at the 80s. I am all in on Everybody Wants Some. Everybody needs to go see Everybody Wants Some. But let's move on then to our next movie, the other college baseball movie I mentioned, Summer Catch. Ryan, what are your thoughts on Summer Catch?
Yeah, it's a big no. It's going to be a big no for me.
Hell
dog.
Yeah. Hell yeah. There's not a whole lot to say on
Prince,
that one.
To be honest.
Yeah, it's rough. It's a bad rom-com.
Exactly. Yeah. You summed it up great. It's exactly what I hate in baseball movies. It shouldn't be a baseball movie.
Absolutely. Let's get into Mr. 3000. One that gets kind of forgotten. RIP Bernie Mac. What's your take for Mr. 3000?
So, I like Bernie Mac a lot. Stand-up comedian, one of my favorites. I kind of can get behind the storyline. However, the idea that somebody is not a Hall of Famer because they have 2,997 hits versus 3,000. And also the idea that because he was the ball player was a dick during his career for 20 years, and then he comes back and plays, I don't know, 60 games or something, and picks up a couple of hits where I don't think you can redeem yourself for that, what would be bad character of 20 years that he was portrayed as. The concept of somebody returning to baseball to accomplish a feat, I do like that, but it overall doesn't really do it for me. And then again, you got that love story in there I would say decent, I guess, for a baseball movie, but bad for a movie overall.
Can I sell you on a real life Mr. 3000 that I would like to happen?
Okay, let's get it.
Do you know how many career home runs that Fred McGriff ended up with?
493.
Can we get someone who's in last place to pay Fred McGriff to DH and get those 7 home runs?
That would be awesome.
I would love to see. He could be just like, there's no way he could be worse than Chris Davis.
I don't think it's possible. I don't know how McGriff has held himself together over the years. I haven't seen him in the public eye at all, but he's somebody who I absolutely have vouched for as a Hall of Famer. I don't think, like, people say, you know, the 3,000 hits, the 300 wins, the 3,000 strikeouts, the 500 homers. To me, it's not any less of an arbitrary number than 493. People just like aesthetically pleasing numbers and these round Hall of Fame clubs. And McGriff is another case where what built the case for Harold Baines is the fact that he played through the 81 strike, the 94 and 95 strikes. He missed games for that, and for those reasons, he missed out on some milestones, such as 3,000 hits and 500 doubles and 300 home runs or 400 home runs. I can't remember which one he got close to. And McGriff is definitely a case where he missed those games in 94 and 95. That absolutely cost him the 7 home runs that would have seen him get in as a first or second ballot Hall of Famer at a time when that's all you needed was that 500 homers.
It's astounding to think that he's 7 home runs away from waltzing in. And I know you've done a lot of work on the Hall of Fame. It's just the concept of that. And like for me, one that hits home for me as a big Minnesota Twins fan is Johan Santana lost out on a Cy Young to Bartolo Colon back when wins were still valued highly. Bartolo led the American League in wins. Santana just was absolutely the better pitcher. I think he led American League pitchers in WAR that year. I think he led the AL in strikeouts. He put in a better season than Bartolo Colon. He wins that Cy Young. It gives him 3. There is not a pitcher aside from Roger Clemens who is not in the Hall of Fame with 3 Cy Youngs. And it's just astounding that those kind of arbitrary things are the difference between walking in first or second ballot. And Johan Santana didn't make it past 1 year on the ballot. Fred McGriff was dropped off the ballot in his final year of voting.
I agree with you completely on Johan. And I know I'm taking you off topic a little bit
now,
here,
but as a Johan Santana fan,
as a Santana fan, I want to throw something for you to look at. And I do think he should be in the Hall of Fame. Take a look at Sandy Koufax from 1961 to 66 and Santana from 03 to 08. Both have the exact same ERA plus during their peaks, if you will, and both have the exact same strikeouts per 9. There's obviously a lot more to look at there, but that's a really fun side-by-side where I think that you absolutely have to consider Johan Santana as a Major League Baseball Hall of Famer.
Well, if you even expand that, Santana's 10-year regular season peak and Koufax's 10-year regular season peak are, you take their 10 best years, stack up very similarly. Obviously, Koufax went and dominated in the World Series. It is not Johan Santana's fault that he was not able to reach the World Series. Koufax, obviously, the circumstances were different for, when Koufax got started, but they both, their careers ended shortly. Koufax because of, I think, arthritis in his elbow. Santana's arm just died. I think it was shoulder or something. But yeah, it's very frustrating to me. So all that circling all the way back around to what we were talking about, I would love to see someone pay Fred McGriff to DH and get those 7 home runs. And that would, I believe, I don't know the rules of the Hall of Fame for sure, but I feel like that would start his clock back over again.
Yep, absolutely. Jose Rijo is a example who came back 5 years after he appeared 2 separate times on the ballot.
Incredible stuff. Okay, let's roll into our next movie. Wrapping up with it, we got a few left. This one is one I referred to not by name earlier. Rookie of the Year. When's the last time you saw Rookie of the Year?
So hold on. Is this the one with the kid pitching in the big leagues?
That is the one.
Okay. I didn't like it. I think I liked it as a kid. I can't remember what year it came through. It's just a really cheesy concept. Again, it's so difficult for me to believe this. And I understand, yeah, he falls and breaks his arm or something. But then I just, it was so cheesy at the end with, like, the mom had hidden the fact that she is the reason that he has baseball skills. And then he throws an underhand softball floater. And it just, I don't know, just doesn't really do it for me at all.
It's legitimately terrible. It's unwatchable as an adult, something I had a lot of nostalgia for as a kid. I will never watch it again after covering it on this podcast. I can say that firmly. It gets compared to Little Big League a lot. Little Big League is the far superior movie. If anyone doesn't agree with that, come fight me. I'll drop a pin. Next one. You mentioned it earlier. I don't think there's much more to go on this. Fever Pitch. Not a great movie.
No, not at all. It's the first one, I think, that I defaulted to as an example as to why I generally don't like baseball movies.
So let's go to a better movie. Sugar. 2008 Sugar. Very underseen, lower budget film. What is your thought? What are your thoughts on Sugar?
So this was one that when I looked at the list, I thought I hadn't seen, but then I looked into and realized I had. And I think this is both a good baseball movie and a good movie overall. Definitely enjoyed it. It is very believable to me that this is something that somebody would go through as a young ball player coming from a different country. I believe came from a different country.
It's as much an immigrant story as it is a baseball movie. It's very good.
Yeah, I definitely like this movie.
Very, even more relevant to today's game, because in the movie, just kind of how they have it structured, he goes straight from the complex league to full season ball, which isn't too common with a guy coming over from the Dominican Republic. And that's basically the future for minor league baseball, in that they are eliminating short season, eliminating that kind of soft landing spot. So it's basically complex leagues or, full season ball in the Midwest League. They filmed the movie in Quad City, so it's actually aged even better. We're down to our last two that I want to ask you about. First one is the Bad News Bears, the original Bad News Bears. I don't acknowledge the Billy Bob Thornton one, even though I do like Billy Bob Thornton. Bad News Bears, how does that hit for you?
I think this is pretty good baseball movie. As a movie overall, maybe middle of the pack there. I think the fact that you're doing the 1976 version versus the Billy Bob Thornton, because I'm the same school of thought, the remake is terrible, and it kind of made me appreciate the original less. This is a movie that is, I mean, it's good, but it's one that, like, I feel like I'd have to watch in my house with the blinds closed, because somebody's going to call me, a nasty name because of all the stuff that they say in this movie. And it's just, not politically correct by today's standards. And some of people's favorite things to do now is to go back in history and try to remove history and cancel things that happened at a time when they were considered more acceptable. I would say good movie, though.
I think it's a good movie. I think it still holds up. I actually did my rewatch and prep for an episode on this one, pulling back the curtain. My guest bailed on me, so I haven't recorded it yet. But it, the 70s were wild times. There's a lot, and this movie would be wholly different if you made it in 2020. Finally, I want to finish up with The Rookie. I'm not exactly sure why this was the last one on my list. It's not like, I don't think it's huge one way or another. What is your thoughts on The Rookie, the Dennis Quaid Disney baseball movie?
So I really like the Jimmy Moore story.
Had him on the podcast a few, I guess 2 months ago now.
That's pretty cool. I did really like the Jimmy Moore story. I like the fact that he had a cameo in his own movie. I don't think they did right by the story personally. I don't think that this should have been a Disney movie. It would have been a lot more interesting to me if somebody else produced it. But I wouldn't go as far as to say it's a bad movie, because the story is absolutely fascinating. And I think there's something to be said about the story from which it's written. But it's not something that I'm particularly interested in watching.
The again. Scene where he first gets called in at the ballpark in Arlington always gives me the chills. You are right. It is definitely a decision to make it a Disney movie. That is, that's what Morris wanted it to be. I mean, they signed the deal with Disney as the studio. Disney makes a very particular kind of sports movie. They're not going to dive in as deep on the nitty gritty. And I feel like there was a lot there, but it's good for what it is. And with that though, I think we've run through a pretty decent amount of baseball movies. We've been doing this for about an hour. You were not as much of a hater as I thought you would be. You relented on a lot of movies. I don't know if that's pressure for me, but I put some stuff on your watch list though. You've got to give Little Big League and A League of Their Own a try, and you've got to go check out Everybody Wants Some.
Well, I'm going to stand by the overarching theme that I try to say when I think baseball movies in general. This is a you know, a very broad generalization to make, and people hate generalizations nowadays, but I think in general, baseball movies suck. And since I disappointed you a little bit with not being too over the top in my takes, I will give you an exclusive thing that I've never talked about on air
regarding
sports movies. And that is two movies ever that have made me cry. And they're both sports movies.
Okay.
Rudy is one.
Okay, fair.
When he gets into the game, I just lose my shit.
Fair, fair.
And this movie that I don't think is very good, but there's a scene in it that just, I don't know, it hit kind of hits home for me, and that's Little Giants.
Really?
The scene where he says, I'm not even going to get too far into it, because even when I talk about it, it gets me choked up a little bit, is the scene where he's like, it's what's the play? And he's like, they say the play name, and the kid's like, what's that? I don't even know. And he said, it's a pitch to Danny. And he's like, Danny? I'm Danny. And then he gets the pitch, and he's freaking out, and then he sees his father in the end zone. And then, oh, I can't even talk about it. It gets me every single time.
Incredible. Incredible. Well, we can't get into all the sports movies that make me cry, because we'd be recording for a while. But Ryan, thanks so much for giving me your time. Tell the folks again where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find the walk-off.
Twitter is at the Ace of Spader. My last name is S-P-A-E-D-E-R. A lot of people forget that first E. And pretty much all of my content is either going to be found on Twitter or my website by the same name, theaceofspader.com. And that's the walk-off. Just, you know, we're a sister program of yours. We are with Blue Wire, and we just like everything else, we pump it out on Twitter as often as possible.
And I appreciate you taking the time to come on this podcast. We're going to have to do this again in some form or fashion. It's just good to talk baseball, good to talk McGriff and Johan Santana. I could do that forever. If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, please remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, rate, review. You guys know the drill. New episodes every Monday. Depending on when this one is dropped, we will either be preceding my episode, my non-sports movie of the month, My Cousin Vinny, or My Cousin Vinny will be next week, so be on the lookout for that. Also, if you are a baseball fan, and if you're not a baseball fan, I don't understand how you made it this long in the podcast, but check out my interview series with Baseball America, from Phenom to the Farm, talking to current and former professional baseball players about their journey through the minors. Next episode is dropping with Carter Capps, former big league reliever. Check that out. That comes at you every other Tuesday. And until then, thanks for listening.